Well, good evening, and once again, happy Mother's Day to you all. We're very thankful for our mothers in the congregation and all the ladies that are a part of our church family at Thompson Road Baptist Church. I trust you've had a good day celebrating your mother with your family. If she's not here in town, maybe you're able to call her and let her know how much you love her and appreciate her. I'm very thankful for my mother, and mothers are wonderful people, are they not? And they say very funny things at times. As you were growing up, maybe you heard some familiar phrases that many mothers have said in the past. Something like, if everyone else jumped off a cliff, would you do it too? Wait until your father gets home. Don't mom me. If you fall out of that tree, don't come crying to me. This bed is not going to make itself. Don't make me say it again. And everyone's favorite. Why? Well, because I said so. That's why. Well, I don't know if you heard any of these particular things when you were growing up. Maybe your mother had her go-to phrases that you heard quite often. But mothers are a source of joy and humor. And they're also a source of love and encouragement, are they not? And it is no wonder, especially because of the time that is spent at home throughout the child, a child's life, that mothers have the greatest impact on children. Out of everybody who impacts us, the person who probably has impacted us the most has been our mother. Here are some things that some famous individuals said about their mother. George Washington said, "My mother was the most beautiful woman I ever saw. All I am, I owe to my mother. I attribute all my success in life to the moral, intellectual, and physical education I received from her." John Wesley said, "I learned more about Christianity from my mother than all the theologians in England." Abraham Lincoln said, "All that I am or ever hope to be, I owe to my angel mother. I remember my mother's prayers, and they have always followed me. They have clung to me all my life." Booker T. Washington, educator and civil rights leader, said, "If I have done anything in life worth attention, I feel sure that I inherited the disposition from my mother." Well, I think we can all agree that the impact that a mother has on her children is immeasurable. But what makes a good mother or a good wife? Perhaps you can think of your mother and all the qualities that she displayed and tried to teach you over the years. And regardless of whether or not you are a mother, maybe you find yourself thinking, as a woman, how can I ever hope to attain to the great standard that and fill the shoes that my mother left for me? You know, how could I meet those standards? I'd love to be the woman that God is pleased with and how I conduct myself and emulate the life of my mother. Well, in Proverbs 31, we see various descriptions of a virtuous woman, one that exemplifies the goal and the role, the standards that mothers and wives ought to be pursuing. Now, you may say, oh, I've heard of hundreds of these messages before, or maybe you think, oh, this doesn't apply to me because I'm not a woman. So, well, before you turn off the computer or whatever you're watching this service on, I'd like to encourage you to approach this passage with fresh eyes, as we should every time we read Scripture, and instead of just mentally checking out and whenever we hear a sermon or read our Bibles because it's something that has, we've read or heard before, we ought to seek to understand what God has for us today and maybe see that passage and today's passage specifically in a new light, in a way that perhaps we had not thought about it before. So let's read in verse 10 of chapter 31. Verse 10 says, "Who can find a virtuous woman? Her price is far above rubies." So the first thing we notice about the virtuous woman is her worth. It is immeasurable. It's far above rubies. The phrase literally means her purchase price is distant from pearls of coral. The value of a virtuous woman is one that cannot be measured or quantified in terms of money. So why is this woman so valuable? What is it that makes her so priceless? Well, to answer that, we need to understand what is meant by the virtuous woman. Now, that word virtue there is the word, Hebrew word chayil. It's kind of an interesting word to say. So in the Hebrew, it's actually a woman of chayil who can find. And so that word has a wide range of meanings. And if you looked up a translation comparison online, you'd see a number of different translations. You'd see virtuous, excellent, a worthy woman, noble, capable, competent, a valiant woman, a woman of worth. So a lot of different meanings that are kind of coming around, hitting various ideas of this word. Now, this word is used 245 times, and it has four basic meanings. The first of which is definitely not the idea of what we're going for here, but it has to do with the idea of a large group, particularly a large group of soldiers. And it's translated in the KJV often as army, forces, or host. Exodus 14:4, God says that he's going to harden Pharaoh's heart, and I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts. Well, this word can also refer to wealth, it's translated as riches, substance, and wealth. God warns the Israelites in Deuteronomy 17:18 that they are not to think when they enter the promised land, my power and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. So this word can have the idea of material possessions and money. Well, this word can also refer to physical strength. And so, and as such, it's translated as power or strength, strong, might. 2 Samuel 22:23 says, my God is my strength and power, and he maketh my way perfect. We also see in Ecclesiastes a comparison of whenever you use a sharp axe, you don't have to use as much strength as you would if you were to be using a dull axe. Then we also see the key way that this word is translated, the key idea in the fourth aspect of meaning. And that's the idea of specific or specially honed skills and ability. We see this in terms of warfare to refer to mighty men of valor or valiant men. They're worth something. They're worth something for battle. They're skilled warriors. In 2 Samuel 23:20, we see a description of one man, a valiant man who had done many acts. He slew two lion-like men of Moab, and he went down also and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in time of snow. So this is a warrior-like man, someone who's skilled in battle and warfare. We see in Judges chapter 6, verse 12, Jephthah was described as a mighty man of valor, someone who is capable, highly capable and skilled in warfare. And that's why the Israelites were calling upon him to lead their armies against the enemies of God, the enemies of Israel who were oppressing them. Well, we also have this word also can have the idea of courageous or honorable and noble. In 2 Samuel verse 17, we see in verse 8, 9, and 10, we see David's counselor, Hushai, is counseling Absalom to not go after David right away. He's really counteracting Absalom's or Ahithophel's advice to Absalom to go kill David now. And Hushai is trying to counteract that advice. And he basically says, if you do this, David's going to lie in wait and have a surprise ambush and attack your people, and your initial people will be defeated. So all your other warriors are going to get discouraged. We see this him say this in 2 Samuel 17:10. And he also that is valiant, that's our word there, whose heart is as the heart of a lion, shall utterly melt. For all Israel knoweth that thy father is a mighty man, and they that which be with him are valiant men. So here the idea of valiant is those who are courageous. That's why he says, whose heart is the heart of a lion. Even these guys, Hushai is saying, who are valiant, courageous men, if they see this happen, their heart is going to melt. We also see that valiant men are described as such whenever they go and retrieve the body of King Saul after he has been defeated in battle against the Philistines. And so they're described as valiant men, and I think that has the idea of courageous or noble, worthy character. These are honorable men who are retrieving the body of their dead king. We also see that this word is translated as activity or able, referring to the idea of ability or capability. King Pharaoh says to Joseph in Genesis 47, verse 6, when he's telling him to bring his family and let them settle in the land of Goshen, he says, "If thou knowest any men of activity among them, make them rulers over my cattle." He's saying these men of activity, these are men of capability or ability to shepherding. So if you know anyone who is skilled in this matter, put them over my cattle. And so you have this idea of special ability or skill or even courage and honor and noble character. My Hebrew teacher had us often translate this word as capacity or one who does efficiently. So these would be men of valor or men of capacity. And this word can also have the idea of moral worth. So 245 times we see it used, and it's most often used to refer to men. But 4 times we see it used of women. And so I think it's significant in order to understand what is meant by a virtuous woman, to understand how it's used throughout Scripture, and then how is it used to refer to women. Well, we'll see it twice in this chapter. And then Proverbs 12:4, we see a virtuous woman is a crown to her husband, but she that maketh ashamed is as rottenness to his bones. And we find this word as discussed in this morning's message in the book of Ruth. It is not by coincidence either that the Hebrew Bible is arranged so that Proverbs ends with Proverbs 31. And then the very next book is about a woman who characterizes this word, who characterizes the Proverbs 31 woman. And that book, the very next book after Proverbs, is Ruth. And because we definitely see that Ruth exemplifies the Proverbs 31 woman. Boaz says about Ruth in verse 3 of chapter 3, verse 11, "And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman." And Ruth was definitely a woman of capacity, a capable woman, one of ability, a diligent worker, one of noble character. Everybody knew that. She had come from her home country to care for Naomi, and she had done so diligently and nobly. And as we look at the descriptions of the virtuous woman, it becomes clear that she is characterized by one who has ability and skill. Specifically, as my Hebrew teacher likes to say, she has the ability to earn wealth. She is a highly skilled woman who is capable of performing many tasks, as we'll see in Proverbs 31. And what does she do with her skill? Does she hoard it for herself and use her skill just for her own advancement and gain? No. She uses her skill and her abilities for others because her concern is for others, for the poor, for her household, for her family, and primarily for her husband. And this leads us to our first main point. The virtuous woman is committed to her husband's well-being. Proverbs 18, verse 22 says, "Whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing and obtaineth favor of the Lord." This is certainly true of the Proverbs 31 woman, because as we see in verse 12, she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. That word good has the idea of welfare, prosperity, and happiness, and overall benefit. Whatever she does in her life, in her relationship to her husband, she is doing it for the benefit of her husband. She's going to bring him benefit and good, as opposed to evil. This word for evil can include the idea of distress or misery. We see Proverbs warns against women who tend to bring misery in the household because they are contentious. We'll read some of those Proverbs later. We also see this word calamity, the idea of calamity being included in this word evil. So she is committed to doing good and bringing benefit to her husband, as opposed to bringing calamity. And in the context, it's really the idea of monetarily. She is going to do him good and benefit him. You know, the Proverbs 31 woman wouldn't bring calamity on the family and upon her husband by, say, running up the credit card bill, just to use a random example. She is going to benefit him financially and not bring calamity. Not only that, does she do him good and not evil, but she also advances his calling. Now, where are you getting that, Pastor Jeremy? Well, in verse 23, we see her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. One authoress wrote, "The implication seems to be that the husband is freed by his wife's activities to participate in the legal and judicial activities that take place within the city gates." That's where they conducted the, council members, so on and so forth, and official business. We may also get the idea or the impression that he has gained his respected position in the community primarily through his wife's endeavors. So it's her character and her hard work that directly contributes to his good standing and good reputation and advancement in society. It's because of her and her significant contribution that he is able to have this position of importance within the community. It has often been said that behind every great man is a great woman. Now, when I Googled that phrase to make sure I got it right, it was coming up, behind every great man is a woman laughing. And oftentimes we men give the ladies in our life reason to laugh at us because of what we do. But anyway, the point here in verse 23 is that because of her, he's able to further his career. It's because he doesn't have to feel the burden of making sure things are okay at home. Because as we see in other verses in this passage, she has got everything covered at home. So he is completely free to pursue the job and the calling that God wants him to pursue. And why can he feel this way and feel this freedom? Well, it's because he trusts her. This is the third aspect of how she does, or really the result of her work, the result of her doing him good and advancing his career, is that he trusts her. Verse 11 says, "The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil," or no lack of gain is the idea. No lack of gain, meaning because of her, she's helping bring income. She's helping him financially. And often we could apply this to maybe the idea that morally he trusts her because she's not a flirt. But I think even more so the primary application is that monetarily he trusts her because she's wise and responsible with the household resources, with their money and how she uses her time. John MacArthur says he does not maintain jealous guard over her or keep his valuables locked up so that she cannot access them, as was a common practice in the ancient world in a house of distrust. She demonstrates impeccable loyalty to her husband, and her thrift and industry will add to his wealth. So the virtuous woman is a woman of capacity, of worth, and excellence. One who is completely committed to the well-being of her husband. But not only that, she is also a diligent worker. She's a diligent worker. And to me, this is really where the Hebrew phrase woman of capacity or woman of chayil comes into play. Because this woman, she would really put any man to shame. You know, we say sometimes about a man, he's a man's man. This lady is a woman's woman. She is the cream of the crop, so, as it were. She is a highly skilled person. And we see first that she has a good work ethic. Verse 13, it says, she seeketh wool and flax, the means of which she can commence with her work. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands, or joyfully. She's willing to do all this work. She's working joyfully. She's not doing this begrudgingly. No one's forcing her. No one's standing over her shoulder and making sure that she's doing what she should. You know, like maybe when you were in math class and the teacher came up behind you and noticed you were drawing stick figures instead of doing your multiplication tables. You know, no, nobody's doing that with her. She's working willingly and joyfully. And not only that, in verse 15, we see that she's an early riser. She riseth also while it is night. She's not lazy in that regard. And she also works late. In verse 18, it says, her candle goeth not out by night. That phrase can either refer to the fact that she's working late into the night, or it could even refer to the idea that she plans ahead so she'll have enough oil for her lamps, as we see the parable of the bridegroom and the 10 virgins and those, some of which were not prepared and did not have enough oil to last the night. And so she's an early riser. She works joyfully. She works late. She plans ahead. And she also is not lazy. Verse 27 says, she looketh well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness, or literally the bread of sluggishness. This is a woman who is very diligent about her work. Well, not only does she have a good work ethic, but she diligently takes care of her household. In verse 14, I'll start reading. She is like the merchant ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth while it is night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. So we see that she's providing food that, you know, good food that is hard to come by. That's why it says she is like merchant ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She makes sure that her household is well fed. Then we also see that in verse 27, as we already read, she looketh well to the ways of her household. Nothing lacks attention. It's all taken care of. The husband doesn't have to worry about whether or not the affairs of the home are in order, because she's got everything, all her ducks in a row. And if her house is clean, her kids are in order. And, you know, whenever I was reading about this and thinking about this, I kind of thought of my mother, as maybe this was how your mother was. Whenever we were having company, whether somebody in the church coming over to have dinner, or maybe even relatives who are going to be spending a few nights with us, she, you know, it was, everybody had to get serious, and we were on a warpath to get the whole house in order and cleaned up and ready. And, you know, mom cracked the whip, as they say, and made sure that everything was in order. And I get that. That's the picture that I get whenever I read that she looketh well, diligently, to the ways of her household. If something needs attention, she gets it done, whether it be cleaning, preparing food, gardening, or providing clothes. And that's the other thing we see about how she takes care of her household. Verse 21 says, she is not afraid of the snow, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. So she's not afraid of the cold times, because she has appropriately dressed her family with the warm clothes that is needed. And because of her diligent work, she is able to provide these clothes. Well, we also see in verse 16 and verse 24 that she's actually an entrepreneur. You're like, what? An entrepreneur? Yeah, look, verse 16, she says, she considereth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hands, she planteth a vineyard. This woman's got a sharp mind and a business savvy mind. She knows a good deal when she sees one. And so she knows when she should invest something. And then she takes what she's invested in here in verse 16, and then she plants a garden. She buys, plants, and sells. We see verse 24, that she maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchants. We see in verse 18 that she perceiveth that her merchandise is good. So once again, we see the idea that she is a highly skilled person. She's got a good, savvy mind for business and for making money, for keeping her household in order. And on top of that, as many of you ladies have played, you know, had multiple hats on in your day of being both a mom and having a career. That this woman right here, she is producing wealth for the benefit of the family. She is definitely a highly skilled woman in regards to business and gardening and sewing and managing wealth and the household. She's definitely a woman who has the ability to earn wealth. Well, finally, she sees it, we see that she is diligent to take care of herself. We see in verse 22 that she is well-dressed, and she takes care of her physical appearance. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. We also see in verse 17 that she is physically fit. You say, wait a minute, are you saying that, you know, I should be some workout gymnastic person that is, you know, basically Arnold Schwarzenegger of women? No, I'm not. That's not what I'm saying. But you look at it here in verse 17, it says, she girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. That phrase literally means makes firm her arms. She is not someone who is a slouch by any means. We see in the New Testament a description of women as being the weaker vessel, but that is only by comparison. Just because she's discussed as the weaker vessel doesn't mean by any stretch of the imagination that she herself is weak. I get the very distinct impression that this woman can hold her own when it comes to strength. And so the principle here is that a godly woman seeks to take care of herself physically and in her appearance as well. So Proverbs 31 describes a woman who is a woman of capacity, a highly skilled woman who is a diligent worker, who unselfishly uses her talents and skills for the good of her husband and for her family. And she also has a beautiful character. And this is where we think of the idea of the virtuous woman and a woman of excellence and moral worth. This is where that idea especially comes into play. We see in verse 20 that she cares for others. She cares for those in need. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hand to the needy. We also see that she uses her tongue wisely in verse 26. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. That word law could be translated teaching, but it's the same word we get for the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. It's the law of kindness. That's what's on her tongue. Kindness there being the word chesed. Again, that's the idea of God's covenantal love or loyal love. This completely contrasts the negative descriptions that Proverbs has already stated concerning various women who are without discretion and who are without kindness in their words. We see Proverbs 11:22 says, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman in which is without discretion. Proverbs 21:19 says, it is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Proverbs 25:24 says, it is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman or a quarrelsome, contentious woman and in a wide house. It's saying that, look, it's better to have a nice small house it's better to dwell up in the roof, you know, in the attic. Or in their day, they didn't have attic. They had, you know, the top of the house that they could walk on. And it's better to dwell up there than to be down in a nice big house with a woman who is quarrelsome, one who doesn't use her words wisely and for building up. This doesn't describe the virtuous woman, though. The law of kindness is on her tongue. She uses her mouth to build others up. She is one who is wise with her words, one who is kind with her words. One described by these verses, as we just read, is certainly not doing good to her husband all her days. Well, because of everything we have read in Proverbs 31, near the close of the chapter, in verse 29, we see that this Proverbs 31 woman, the virtuous woman, is one who is without equal. Verse 29 says, many daughters have done virtuously, or chagil. Many daughters have done excellently, efficiently, capably, nobly, worthily. But thou hast surpassed them all. Thou excellest them all. She is without equal. And why is that? Why? What is the driving force behind why she excels beyond all the other daughters who are noble in their own right? Why is it that she's diligent in her work and doing good for her family, primarily her husband? Well, it's because she fears the Lord. Verse 30 says, favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Now, this verse says that, you know, beauty is fleeting. Beauty is vain. Favor is deceitful. It's literally lying. All of that, it's only here temporarily. But the thing that is the most important quality about this woman is that she fears the Lord. She takes care of herself. She's no slouch. She's not trying to get by. She makes sure that takes care of her physical appearance. But more than that, she fears the Lord. That is her primary concern. Her relationship with God is the most important characteristic about her. It's the driving force behind everything she does. It's the reason that she is diligent in taking care of her household. And it's because she fears the Lord. She follows the admonition of Titus 2, 4 and 5 that says to love and obey your husband and to love your children and be a keeper of the home. She is committed to doing good for her husband and seek his well-being because she fears the Lord. She seeks to be that suitable helpmeet that God describes and made the woman to be in the first place in Genesis 2. Seeking to make up for where the man lacks and help him pursue his God-given responsibilities, what God has called him to do in life. Now, obviously, this doesn't mean that the husband lords over his wife and she is to serve his every whim as a servant. But Genesis 2 does teach us that out of everything that God created, he noticed that something wasn't good, something wasn't right, something wasn't perfect. And it was the fact that man was alone. He said it was not good for man to be alone. I will make him a helpmeet suitable for him. And so we see that Adam needed Eve to better accomplish his God-given mandate to rule and have dominion over the earth and to take care of the Garden of Eden, to dress it and to care for it. So the God-fearing woman seeks to fulfill her God-given role in every way possible by doing good for her husband and doing her part to help her husband succeed in fulfilling God's calling on his life. This is the virtuous woman. This is the woman of capacity, of skill, excellence, and virtue. And what a woman. And what a description we have. And this leads us to the final point as you think about the women in your life, of your wife or your mother. Don't take her for granted. Make sure that your wife or your mother knows how much she is appreciated and loved. That's the final point. The virtuous woman is to be cherished. We see in verse 28 that she must be praised. Her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, he praiseth her. Children, don't neglect to praise your parents, to specifically thank your mom for what she has done. Whether you're 55 years old, 15 years old, or 5 years old, if you're able to, go give your mother a hug tonight and tell her, I'm thankful for you and for everything you do. Do that. And if maybe your mother has already passed on, like I'm sure is the case for many of you, thank God for the mom that he gave you. Husbands, make sure your wife knows how much she is appreciated, how much she is loved, and how much you don't take for granted everything she does in taking care of the house. And because she is to be cherished and praised, we also see in verse 31 that this woman is to be rewarded. Verse 31 says, "Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates." She doesn't. It's interesting that she doesn't have to seek out praise because everyone knows about her works. Let her own works praise her in the gates. Everybody can see what she has done. Everybody knows about this woman. She is a woman worthy of praise, just like Ruth was a woman worthy of praise because of everything she had done for Naomi. She was a diligent, hard worker, capable, a highly skilled woman, and someone who was of noble character, worthy character. And so she should, her works and accomplishment are known and they praise her and we should praise her. And just as the wife unselfishly gives of her talents, her skills for the good of her husband and her household, the husband should not be selfish and with the benefits that he is reaping from all her hard work. Because verse 31 says, give her of the fruit of her hands. She should be rewarded and reap the benefits of her hard work as well. Perhaps you sit here tonight as a woman, whether or not you're a mother or a wife or not, and you think, man, the standards and the goal of Proverbs 31, you know, loom before me as a giant wall that's insurmountable. How could I ever hope to attain unto these standards? My encouragement and challenge to you would be to not lose hope, to go to the Lord in prayer and seek His face and ask Him to help you in these areas, to be that virtuous woman that He wants you to be. And it starts by fearing the Lord. It starts with your relationship with God. And as you pursue that relationship, He can help you. He'll help you change and grow in these areas that we've discussed. And I would encourage you to maybe take one or two aspects of this passage, like even just simply committing to use your words to build one another up, to have the law of kindness on your tongue and not say negative things to one another that put others down. Set small goals for yourself. And so as God helps you, you will grow in your sanctification and you will start to see fruit day by day, little by little. To the men, this still applies to us because we ought to be living life, a life that is worthy of such a woman, one that seeks to have integrity, one that seeks to work diligently before the Lord and to have spiritual leadership in our own life and spiritual discipline and growth. And then to everyone else, all of us, I would say that we ought to thank God for our mothers. Maybe some of us would have to admit that maybe you have not treated your mother as you ought. Maybe not. You haven't expressed the thanks and praise for her for everything she has done. And I would encourage you to, as soon as possible, make that right. Go to her, apologize, ask her to forgive you, and let her know how much you love her and how much you thank her for everything she does for you. I realize that no mother is perfect and that I don't know every situation. But I will say that we should not find ourselves to be guilty of ingratitude towards the women in our lives, particularly our mothers. That we ought to heap praise and thanks upon them, for they have done so much for us. And we ought to thank the Lord especially for our mothers as they seek to pursue the virtues of the Proverbs 31 woman. And I pray that every single one of us would seek to be described as she is described in verse 30, one that fears the Lord. Let's pray.